From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Writer and humorist Dave Barry has feasted on Miami for years. He moved down from the United States, he likes to say, in 1986. It's been a great ride ever since. A Pulitzer in 1988 for commentary in the Miami Herald, and column after column, book after book, on American life, crazy politics, funny Florida, and Miami. It's all back in his new novel, Insane City, on America and Miami this hour. On Point, Dave Barry on Insane City. How do you picture, how do you know Miami? Are you ready to let Dave Barry be your guide? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Dave Barry joins me now from New York. He's a busy man. The Broadway play Peter and the Starcatcher, off his prequel to the Peter Pan story, won 5 Tonys last year. His book Lunatics went big on warped politics. His latest, Insane City, goes to Miami with pythons, strippers, billionaires, medical marijuana, and a wedding party gone off the rails. Dave Barry, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be here.
You moved to Miami. How long was it before you had the passport to make fun of Miami, Dave?
Actually, I'd been visiting Miami for a few years before I moved there. The Miami Herald hired me in 1983, and they flew me down. This is when they were like – we were talking about a job. And they flew me down there, and I remember getting off the airport and getting lost immediately. I had a rental car. And the whole place just seemed nuts to me. And then I saw things there that I had never seen before. Not one, but 2 cars I saw go by with bullet holes in the side of the car, like a string of them, like
yeah,
a machine
sure.
gun, I
guess. Yeah, you sure they weren't just vents, Miami vents?
And so I was, very reluctant to move to Miami. But I kept coming. So when I first worked for the Miami Herald, yeah. I would visit. I would write stories about Miami. But I thought, I'm never going to come here. I'm never going to raise a child here. But then over those next couple of years, I kind of fell in love with it. I started making fun of it almost immediately. But making fun of it out of love, it took a couple of years.
You know, is Miami so different? Would it have been the same? Let's say it was the St. Louis Post-Dispatch who, brought you, or the Seattle Times, or you name it. I mean, is Miami really so much more target-rich than any other city in the country if you put a humorist like Dave Barry to work on some other city? Or is it in a class of its own?
Well, I'm not going to say necessarily it would exceed Boston, but it definitely would. It's got St. Louis beat. It's just an unusual place. First of all, nobody's from there. Nobody. Everybody comes from somewhere else, and I include a lot of the marine life in that statement. And everyone comes there, but nobody really ever. There's nothing to become when you get there. You sort of stay whatever you were. It sort of becomes some mixture with everybody else. My what I like to say is that we all arrive from different places, but we all continue to drive according to the laws of whatever country we originated in.
Right.
There's just like a sort of a non-seriousness about it. Our politics, our civic leaders, they're not like – they haven't been there a long time. We don't have a really strong tradition of good government in Miami. My suggestion over the years has been that to streamline our government, we could swear them in and indict them in one ceremony and just
taking care of business.
But in Miami, like having been in jail for several years for corruption is not necessarily a bar to high public office. It's like it kind of like it almost suggests to the electorate, well, we'll vote for him again. He's experienced. He's got a legal team already.
He got his ticket punched. Come on in. But you say non-serious, but can that really be? I mean, here you've got, in greater Miami, lots and lots of people. You've got lots and lots of business. You've got lots and lots of culture. Can it really be non-serious once you have that many people living together? Isn't that a serious issue just on the face of it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have problems. We have, issues with the schools, issues with the roads, issues with everything. We just don't solve these problems. We don't even seem to be trying to solve these problems. We have a foreign policy in Miami, but we don't necessarily have a domestic and policy for anything.
Yeah, well, take us to Miami and your new cast of characters that you're unleashing on the city. Who are you bringing to Miami in Insane City, Dave?
Well, it's a wedding party. The bride is a woman named Tina, who's from a very wealthy family.
Billionaire class.
Yes. Her dad is an extremely wealthy guy, has several helicopters. And Tina is a lawyer for a high visibility DC law firm. She's very cause oriented. She's, just generally wants to do good, wants the world to be a better place, and is very, very aggressive about pursuing that. Her fiancé, a guy named Seth, is a complete loser, slacker. His career so far, the best job he's been able to get is he tweets for a living. The range of products he tweets for goes from forklifts to douche. He's a tweeter. And there are people
more than a tweeter. He calls himself a tweet whore. That is, he speaks up on Twitter and says, "Oh, this is a great bar. You've got to try it for pay." He does that.
And there are people who actually do that, and that's Seth's job. And he's not proud of it. He's not proud of anything, but he has no ambitions really. He can't believe Tina has agreed to marry him. Most of her friends and certainly her parents also can't believe that she's agreed to marry him, but she loves him, and she sees him as sort of a handsome accessory to her life, which she is going to be completely the captain of the ship. And then – so they arrive in Miami, and they're going to get married at the Ritz-Carlton. And one of the things that inspired me to write this book is I attended a wedding at the Ritz-Carlton on Key Biscayne. It's a beautiful hotel, and the wedding gazebo outside, it looks over the Atlantic Ocean, very beautiful. Yeah. And that's where Tina's going to get married. It's an incredibly expensive wedding that she has planned. And she's gone off the rails the way brides tend to do with expensive weddings.
Bridezilla is in the house here.
Yeah. And I went through this. This was another kind of inspiration for the book. My son got married a couple of years ago. Mm. You're in New York. And I love my daughter-in-law, but she went insane a little bit the way – and she knew it at the time. There's no cure for bride insanity except to have a wedding.
Right.
And I really think they'd go through it even if the groom died. I was like, just go ahead and have the wedding because anyway, the wedding immediately starts to go wrong. Everything goes wrong. Miami happens to this wedding in a way that only Miami can. Now, particularly Seth and his groom posse.
And their bachelor party
they never even really get to their own bachelor party. That's how incompetent they are. They get lost over on South Beach, and things just go terribly, terribly wrong. And poor Seth, who just wants to go ahead and be the groom and have it, gets confronted with this moral dilemma and has to decide what to do about it. And it ends up jeopardizing his wedding. And most of the book, the plot revolves around how he's going to handle this moral dilemma and how he's going to handle the fact that Tina, his bride-to-be, is extremely unhappy with the situation he's created.
You had me laughing in a hurry. You really know how to do it. I mean, you're a pro at this, and you roll out all the madcap stuff. You've got your giant python and your Russian gangsters and your angry strippers and your pimps and orangutan and the whole works. These guys are naked on the sidewalk before you know it. And I found myself thinking, I mean, you're really plugged in. You know what you're doing. We've had Bridesmaids. We've had The Hangover. This is written almost as if sort of, screenplay ready for Hollywood. But is there a market for Hangover 6 here?
I don't know. There's been a lot of bridal movies, Hangover-ish movies. So, I don't know. My guess is no, because there have been so many. But there is that. There's this other element, though, which is I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but Seth ends up with a family of Haitians living in his groom's suite.
Who bob up on the shore in extreme duress as he's sort of a floundering naked in Hangoverland or near there.
And Seth rescues them without intending to. That's not really what he wants to do with his weekend.
Miami's a complicated place.
Right, it's a complicated place. And he just he can't quite get out of it. The rule is for now anyway, that if Cubans come ashore, which they do regularly in Miami, they can stay because they're fleeing political repression. Oppression. That's the theory. And if Haitians come ashore, they can't because they're fleeing economic. And so he ends up with Haitians, and that creates a huge problem for him.
We all think about South Beach when we think of Miami these days. How much of that South Beach sort of club scene craziness is Miami? Is it a little fringe? Is it a big deal?
It's a big deal, but it's if you live there, as I do, you don't spend you don't go over there much. I once did a magazine piece on the club scene on South Beach. It's an unusual thing. I coordinated with the club scene. We had a club writer for the Miami Herald at the time, whose job was to go to cover the clubs, and I would meet her. Her name was Tara Solomon. Mm. For a week, I would meet her every night at midnight. That's when she started her evening.
Welcome to Miami, as they say.
Yeah, it's because she was the club writer. We could go into any club and go to any VIP room. So I followed her around in the middle of the night every night.
Stand by there in New York with that story.
Sure.
We're going to go clubbing with you here. Here's DJ Plastic Funk at the Bamboo Club in Miami last week. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about wild times in Miami and beyond with humorist, novelist, longtime columnist, Miami man Dave Barry. His madcap new Miami novel is Insane City. Behind me right here from Miami's Club Paradox, their web ad for their blowout rave party, Rave Invaders 3. Music by DJ Sandro Silva right there. You can join us this hour. Is Miami Insane City to you? What's your mental picture of the city, its people, its cultures, its vices? What's your mental picture of Dave Barry? Has he made you laugh, taken you places? Have you followed him to Florida? He's got a wedding going on. The wedding party of guys shows up. There's a bit, Dave, where they're looking down Ocean Drive. I wonder if you'd read just a bit from Insane City for us.
Okay, this is when they first get there.
Yeah.
They're trying to get to Key Biscayne, but because of the Miami taxi driver, they end
good
up
luck.
On
yeah.
Ocean Drive. Yeah, Miami taxi drivers are the only taxi drivers ever seen in my life who routinely drive slower than everyone else and don't know where they're going. But anyway, this is the wedding party now. They've just been let off on Ocean Drive, which is nowhere near where they're trying to get. They look down Ocean Drive, surveying the bumper-to-bumper line of tourist-driven rental cars crawling past sidewalk cafe tables filled with tourists drinking fruit festoon rum drinks and watching the passing pedestrian parade of still more tourists. There were no taxis in sight. They started walking, luggage in tow, weaving their way through the maze of sidewalk tables. After a block and a half, they came to the Clevelander, a legendary South Beach bar bearing no resemblance to anything that has ever existed in Cleveland. On a small stage next to the packed bar, a woman wearing a basically invisible bikini was writhing to inhumanly loud pounding music. Nearby, beneath the sign that said DJ Booga Wooga, was a man wearing black lace-up boots and a purple thong held up by orange suspenders. He was shouting into a microphone, "Last call for the Miss Hot Amateur Bod Contest. Ladies, come on up. First prize is $100. Come on, ladies. Let's see what you got." Standing near the DJ were a dozen young women wearing garments that, if all of them were combined, might have provided enough fabric to make a sock.
Dave Barry.
And I have to say, every now and then when we have visitors come to Miami, we will take them over to South Beach.
Yeah.
And it is unbelievable what women wear over on South Beach.
Or
how
don't.
Women wear.
Or
and you,
don't.
And you basically, the question you're always asking yourself is, how does she sit down? And can I be there when she tries to?
Jeez. And that's just from Insane City, Miami, Florida talk all over the place. Real Housewives of Miami. Every city's got it, it seems like, lately. But here off Bravo, the promo for their second season. Just that flavor.
There's definitely new Miami money. This house is built by boobs. And old Miami money.
These girls are ruthless.
Everything goes on in Miami.
We all have egos. Everyone has an ego.
Like you said, I know I'm with the old, you with the new.
a little of that crazy theme from Real Housewives. And then in the news, in the last, just few days here, python hunting in Miami. Python makes its way into Dave Barry's book, Insane City. Here's from last week. This was in Homestead on the outskirts of the Everglades. Ruben Ramirez, founder of the group known as Florida Python Hunters, showed the New York Times how he captures the big invasive species, the Burmese python.
You see her? You got her? This is a perfect example of a Burmese, wild Burmese right now. We just came across. It's 9:21 a.m. She's trying to crawl away. I'm going to go ahead and grab her now. It's like a 10-foot Burmese python. First python, easily 10-foot Burmese python.
And he's breathing hard. One of those shows right up in Insane City. I want to bring our callers in. Chris in Chelmsford, Massachusetts. Chris, you're on the air with Dave Barry.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Chris.
I was a reporter in Miami right around the time you arrived. I worked for a TV station down on Brickell Avenue. And by right after the Overtown, right before the Overtown riot, and I remember one day sitting down with Alan Greenspan to do an interview at the Diplomat Hotel in Hollywood. And the next day they sent me back to the same hotel because Sheikh Mohammed Al-Fassi, who was building a house down there, was handing out $100 bills on the street.
Welcome to Miami.
just bizarre. And every day was like that, something different. One day at the morgue, the next day, you know, Entertainment Tonight.
So you were a reporter there, Chris. You saw the craziness. Of course, every city has its own breed, its own brand. Do you see how all that, I don't know, warped or revved up Dave Barry?
Oh, indeed, yes. And you could get it in the newspaper columns, but there were a lot of wonderful books that have been published about those stories, novelettes that delight and keep everyone captivated.
Fellow reporter right off the street, Chris, I appreciate your call. Let's get one more right here from Miami. Larry's calling. Larry, you're on with Dave Barry.
Thank you both, gentlemen. Yeah, as I speak here, I'm calling from Aventura, right near Williams Island. They're on 186th Street. Dave may know it. I've been coming down here with family for 35 years, and it has indeed changed. I remember South Beach when it was Hot Plate Heaven, or Hot Plate Haven, as we called it, where all the elderly once lived. But I've got to say, I mean, this place makes me shake my head. It's full of immigrants, which probably explains the smoking, constant chain smoking here, unlike anything I've seen in the rest of the states. Litter abounds. People have no qualms about throwing things in the water or out of their cars. And they don't seem to realize, they don't seem to be enmeshed with the weather. On beautiful days, they ride with the windows up and the air conditioners blasting, even when it's 65 degrees. It doesn't stop them from also wearing furs and knee-high boots when it's under 75 degrees. But at the same time, as I said, on beautiful days, for those of us who spent most of our lives in New England, when we'd be running around with the top down, not here.
Hey, Larry, what kind of immigrants, Larry? What kind of cars? What kind of people in them?
Well, the Starbucks that I hang out with some regularity here as a retiree, I've got to say it's mostly Israeli and Russian, and they are constantly on the phone and constantly making deals. Real or imagined, I don't know. I mean, it's said lots of people here drive their Bentleys and Rolls and Mercedes, and indeed there are a lot of them, more than anywhere else I've ever seen, that most of them are on credit. That's probably the case.
Beautiful and, people, that, you know, wearing enough material to make a sock? Hmm?
Eye candy, Tom. I mean, you know, I feel sorry to be a woman here. I mean, frankly, if you haven't had plastic surgery, if you're not willing to dress like a 30-year-old hooker, men just don't look at you. It's an incredible glimpse of, it's almost the Wild West here. I think in a lot of ways, I think it's an enhanced comic book vision of what it is to be an American in the 21st century. And I think it's the immigrant's vision. So it's fast talking, it's constant talking. As I said, it's the chain smoking, the fancy cars, and the women as eye candy. And all that done in a beautiful environment, which people really don't notice. And it took me years to realize that it's really not about the tropics here. It's not about the beauty of the environment. It's just about the absence of the snow.
And you're sitting right there. Larry, have a nice day in Miami. Dave, Barry, does that sound like you're Miami?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. That's the thing about Miami. Where he is, it's Israelis and Russians in downtown Miami. It's likely to be Central Americans everywhere in Miami, Cubans who have done very well. My neighborhood, I live in Coral Gables. The people on the street next to me are Cuban family, but next to them is a Dutch family, and next to them is a Brazilian family. So people from everywhere. He's absolutely right about the weather. One of my favorite things in Miami is when the temperature drops to, let's say, you know, on a December or January day, gets down to the 50s.
Ooh.
or low 60s,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Suddenly you're seeing everybody's wearing like parkas. Women are wearing fur coats, boots.
You have to exercise those fur coats. Right?
Got
to
use them. You got them, you know.
But you know, when Larry says he sees a 21st century immigrant Wild West comic book version of America in Miami. And is that like six streets and the rest is, you know, Andy of Mayberry? Or is it wider than that?
There is no Andy of Mayberry in Miami. It seriously, it never gets what you would call normal. There's, you know, many, many, many different neighborhoods. You know, some will be all Venezuelan, some will be all Haitian, some will be... But at no point does it turn into Mayberry RFD in right around Miami. Now, if you go farther up the state of Florida, somewhat. But
yeah.
Even there, I mean, Florida's a pretty weird state. It really is.
But are Miamians, I don't know, the Chamber of Commerce going to protest when they hear you describe it this way? Or do they say, yeah, that's us. Come on, enjoy.
They kind of do now. You know, the big change that I noticed when I got to Miami in the early 80s, they kept trying to pretend there wasn't like horrendous crime and that bales of cocaine were not falling from the sky or bales of marijuana were not washing up on the beaches. Mm. They used to call them square groupers.
Yeah.
These giant
square
when I first got there.
Yeah.
That was, you know, that happened.
Yeah.
But the Chamber of Commerce fought that. They fought it hard and they wanted it to be, you know, sun and surf like it always. They wanted it to be Orlando. Then when it really changed, I'll never forget this, was when Miami Vice came out.
Mm-hmm.
And here, you know, you would think that would be the biggest nightmare for the Chamber of Commerce. Miami Vice is a show where two guys basically ride around and get shot at and shoot at drug dealers.
At gangsters everywhere. Yeah.
Everywhere. There are drug dealers everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, they're well-dressed. Everybody was well-dressed
sure.
and handsome, but they were still – and that show became instantly so huge, so hot, and that became what Miami was. I mean, it was kind of obviously a distorted view of Miami as just as much as the Disney was distorted, but it was – it was hot. It was hip. It was cool. And Miami slowly figured out, wait a minute, that's what we're selling here. The sort of intrigue and danger and breaking the rules thing instead of the wholesome family fun thing. So I think although they'll still try to tell you that the crime is down and so – which I think it is and
yeah.
drug smuggling is down and everything, that's still part of the appeal of the city. And I think that the Chamber of Commerce knows that.
The city that's working it. Jonathan yeah. in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Jonathan, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. What do you think?
So I always thought Miami was a great experience when I was living there for 3 years, but I always found it amusing that on South Beach, even the mannequins have breast augmentation.
Get out of town. That's mannequins all over the world.
They apparently know their target market there.
What's that pumped up sensibility come from, do you think, Jonathan? I mean, you're in Myrtle Beach. You know about beach culture. It's not as if bikinis are only in Miami. What's going on in Miami?
Oh, good heavens. That's a very difficult thing to diagnose. All I would say is that Miami being so intercultural, everybody brings something of them from wherever they come from, good and bad. And I don't know. I think they think that they still have to impress as well. I'm not exactly sure, but I enjoyed my time living there, and there were a lot of real people, too. It's not all plastic.
Of course.
But that plastic element is definitely there front and center.
Hey, Jonathan, I appreciate your call. Michelle in Boston, you're on with Dave Barry.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Tom. I actually grew up in Miami in the neighborhood in Pinecrest, and just hearing Dave mention the non-suitness of civic leaders, it just reminded me of a story last week of our former mayor, Carlos Alvarez,
who, the bodybuilder.
Is now a bodybuilding champion.
Okay.
And was on the front page of the Miami Herald last week.
But he could be a serious bodybuilder. That would make him serious.
Oh, he is. He's in the senior division, but he's doing quite well. This like oiled up, hyper muscled guy.
So who says he's not a serious civic leader?
Well, I mean, I don't know. He did get ousted too. So for corruption, or I think it was corruption or paying off. I don't know, his cronies, something like that.
Michelle, do you read Dave Barry? Does he get it right? Does he capture it?
Yes, I do. I'm actually really excited to read your book. I read Big Trouble and saw the movie, and I thought they were both so fun and so accurate and really captures the sort of crazy, atmosphere and just sort of the wildness of it.
Just the wildness of it. Boy, that is material for a guy like Dave Barry to work with. And you say he's right on the target. Michelle, thanks for that. Let me get one more from Miami. Dave Barry's new book is Insane City, and he's talking about Miami. Luke's on. Hi, Luke. You're on the air.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Okay. What do you see there in Miami?
Well, I just want to say that I think Miami is a place that you really need to live here to fully understand how surreal of a place it is. Every day you might notice one thing that's kind of makes you think twice about really, like, where am I living? What is this real place? For example, you might see a family of peacocks stopping traffic for, half a mile in a neighborhood.
Do you mean actual birds or peacocky people?
Yeah, there are peacocks all over down there.
Oh, peacock.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, actual peacock. Exactly. Now, coming from Connecticut, that's not something that I'd ever seen before, so it took me a long time to really understand what that was about. Similarly, I saw a recalled mayor, Carlos Alvarez, just the other day in a grocery store, which wouldn't be weird except the fact that he's a champion bodybuilder now. You don't really see things like this anywhere else in the country, and I think every day you might pick something up that really makes you think, wow, this is really a unique place that's not like anywhere else in the world. At the same time, I've grown to love it very much, so I wouldn't really want to live anywhere else.
Hey, we're glad to hear it, Luke. Dave, thanks for your call from Miami. Dave Barry, it almost seems unfair. I mean, you have all of this to pull on for your columns back in the day, for your books and your humor now. I mean, Carl Hiaasen, same thing. This is just too rich.
It's easy. Carl has the best line. He goes, if you want to be a novelist in Miami, you don't need an imagination. You just need a subscription to the Miami Herald. And the other thing is, like, nothing you can make up ever exceeds what's actually happening. Like, when I first heard of the Python challenge that, to inviting everybody to come shoot our pythons.
Because they have so many in the Everglades now, they're overrunning the native species and all.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a Carl Hiaasen novel plot. People would say, no, come on, what state would do that? We do it. Who would have a bodybuilder ex-mayor,
How's the python hunt going, by the way?
Not very well.
Why?
The pythons are winning.
I mean, are you ever going to pull them down? I think there have been 100,000 or something.
Yeah, there's 100,000 or more pythons in the Everglades. The last figure I heard before I left Miami on Sunday, they have killed 30. 1,000 people down there. So I don't think this is going to work. I think we may need drones.
You've got to be careful what you suggest. You've got a character walking around Miami with a 10-foot python on his shoulders in Insane City.
Those guys are real. One of the things that I was always struck by when I first got to Miami is the number of men walking around with large snakes around their necks. Sometimes they're like making money posing with tourists. Sometimes they're just doing it as an accessory.
An accessory, a 10-foot python. Dave Barry's got that kind of accessory and a lot more in his madcap new novel, Insane City. He joins us today from New York. Here's Miami Nights from Andy Palacio and the Garifuna Collective. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. A little Hurricane Wilma behind us right there. Hit Miami in October of 2005. Category 2. hurricane. We're talking about wild times in Miami and beyond this hour with humorist, novelist, longtime columnist, Miami man Dave Berry. He's out with a madcap new Miami novel. It's called Insane City. There's plenty going on there. Home to a big gay population. Here's some street sound from the 2011 Miami Beach Gay Pride Parade. It's not all zaniness. Haitian immigration on a tough path. A little bit of that in Dave Berry's novel, Insane City, as well. Here's singing from the 2011 Justice for Haitian Immigrants rally in Miami.
No, 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 papa, no,
no, no, no, no, papa, no.
Dave Berry joins us today from New York City. Talk to us about the Haitian thread that comes in here. You've got a wild party going on in the middle of it. You've got a young woman out of Haiti with a couple of kids in a pretty desperate situation. I mean, I thought this is interesting. This isn't all just zany. How'd you decide to mix the theme in, Dave?
I was sitting at a wedding at the Ritz-Carlton, sitting in the audience, looking toward the gazebo where the couple were getting married, and behind them is the Atlantic Ocean. And Key Biscayne is a place where rafts routinely appear from Cuba and Haiti, boats and rafts of immigrants. And I thought, just struck me, what would happen if during this wedding a raft showed up, you know, right there? And that's really what got me thinking about it. And then I decided to have it happen before the wedding and to make it Haitians, just to give the guy, the groom, the protagonist in the book, a problem. And it's a big problem for him. He saves the life of this Haitian woman and her kids, but then he's responsible for them. And she does not want to go to the authorities because she'll just be sent back to Haiti. So this creates quite a problem for my guy, Seth.
Seth has a lot of problems. He's on the verge of being married here. He's got a wife who's large and in charge and very cool and very sharp. He's got the bachelor buddy friends looking to put on a party with strippers and all the rest that's getting him in trouble. Maybe you'd read a little bit more for us, Dave, there, when Seth is dealing with Tina in the run-up to the wedding.
Right. This is Seth and Tina now. His fiancée. Yeah. Seth walked through the suite, which was even bigger than his, and found Tina outside on a lounge chair, tanning in a white bikini, looking stunning as always. "Babe, I'm sorry," he said, leaning over to kiss her. She accepted the kiss but did not return it. "I'm not insecure," she said. "I know that. You're the most not insecure person I've ever met. But this, I was fine when I saw the stripper last night." "Okay, she's not really a..." "Let me finish." "Okay, sorry. I was fine with the stripper you were with last night because it was your bachelor party, and I knew she was just some tramp Kevin and Marty hired, and you would never do anything to jeopardize our relationship. Also, she is nowhere near as hot as I am." "Of course not. But listen, she's not even..." "Let me finish. So even though you embarrassed yourself last night in front of me and my parents with the bimbo and the snake guy, I was okay with it because I understand guys get drunk and act like idiots for their bachelor party. And above all, I trust you. Okay, so that was last night. Now it's today. The bachelor party is over, and it's the day of our rehearsal dinner. I call your room, and a woman answers, apparently a different woman, definitely a rude woman, and she won't tell me who she is, and she hangs up on me. A woman in your room hangs up on me. Tina, I can explain this." "Good, because as I say, I'm not an insecure person, but I really, really would like an explanation." "Okay, there's Haitians in my room." "Haitians?" "Right, three of them, a mother and two kids. One's a baby." "And that's who hung up on me, the Haitian mother?" "No, that was LaDawn." "And LaDawn is?" "A stripper. But I swear to God, she didn't strip. She was there when I got back last night because Marty hired her, which I told him not to. But she never took off her clothes, thank God. But she's still in your room. She's taking care of the Haitians with Cindy." "Who's Cindy?" "She's the woman who was just with the snake guy. But she's not a stripper. She was just helping out with the Haitians." "Okay," said Tina. "Exactly why are there Haitians in your room?"
You get the idea. Dave Berry reading there from Insane City, and off we go. Yeah, it's pretty well. "A woman in your room hangs up on me," says the fiance on almost her wedding eve. Liz in New Orleans, calling from Louisiana. You're on with Dave Berry, Liz.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hey.
I lived in Miami in the early 90s and loved it. It was really a great experience. And I'm back in New Orleans now, but I think we should get the Cajun swamp people out there to go wrestle the python problem.
You think they could handle them? There's a lot of pythons down there, Liz.
Well, I think they could give it a shot. I mean, they're pretty industrious. Why not? Invite him down there to do it.
Call in some Cajuns.
It's probably better to do it in the spring, not in the winter.
Yeah, okay. All right. Send in some gator hunters for the pythons. Maybe that would do it. Maybe they need a little Cajun attention there. Michael in Palm Beach, Florida. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for my call.
Sure. What do you know?
I follow Dave Barry, Carl Hyacin, Gary Stein. I was a teenager when I first arrived in South Florida in the mid-1980s.
Yeah.
And what I explain to people as a full adult now is South Florida, Miami in particular, is one of the few places left in America where if you've got some kind of trouble, wherever you're coming from, country or state, you can totally reinvent yourself with no problem.
Yeah.
And nobody cares and nobody bothers.
Were you grateful for that, Michael? Was that good for you?
Well, I was a gay kid, literally total story, got off the Greyhound bus in Miami, and I created a life for myself, a very, very good life. And from literally the week I arrived in South Florida, in Miami, it was all a lifelong education of not bothering to judge and just accepting things for what they are. I worked mm-hmm. in a restaurant to put myself through college
yeah.
owned by a concentration camp survivor. And one of my coworkers was picked up by the government because they were part of the former Duvalier government, the Tonton Macoute in Haiti.
Yeah.
But you just encounter this whole group of different people. And in the 80s, I had to leave this small town I was from in Indiana and totally reinvent myself. And every time I meet somebody to this day who I can tell they've come from someplace else and they're trying to do it all over again, I admire them. And I think Dave Barry's interpretation of stories of mm-hmm. what happens down here, it doesn't shed a bad light. It sheds a positive light mm-hmm. on South Florida. And I love his stories. I share his stories even with old classmates of mine from up north.
Hey, Michael, I'm really glad for that call. And let me take it to Dave, if I may. You know, Dave, this sort of pressure valve for the country, or one of them anyway, a place where you can go if you're in Michael's shoes or anybody else's and reinvent yourself overnight in Miami. And there's a man who you know, says, look, I owe a lot about my whole life to that aspect of Insane City, of Miami.
I love what Michael said, and it's true. The one of the great things about Miami is it really does not judge. Anything goes there. People do not tend – there's not an established social order that you have to climb your way up through. Anybody can just show up and be anybody in Miami, and sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad, but it is not a judgmental city.
Mm-hmm.
It likes to have a good time, and if you can contribute to that good time in any way, you know, Miami welcomes you. They're happy to have you.
Hey, roll our tape back, Dave Barry. We came to a break in the middle of a story about you and a nightclub reporter out in your early days, and I lost the thread of that one. Wrap it up for us, that.
Okay. I spent a week going to clubs with Tara Solomon, who was yeah. known as the Queen of the Night and Woo. Was our club reporter
yeah.
and could get into all the VIP. So I went to all the hot clubs and it, you know, with the hot one in one night is not necessarily the hot one another. You know, the ones where the bouncers and everything.
Sure.
And what I discovered was what goes on inside the clubs is they're incredibly loud. So you just sit around with other people listening to this unbelievably loud music. And you can't talk. You can't. And so every now and then, somebody will shout, "Should we go to another club?" Then we go to another club. And that would be incredibly loud. After a week of this, I thought, "That's it. That's what it's all about." So I stopped clubbing.
But sometimes that is what it's all about. Yeah. Ian in Los Angeles is calling. Ian, you're on the air with Dave Barry. Thanks for calling.
No problem. Hi, Tom. Hi, Dave.
Hi.
A question about the tropic hunt, but first I wanted to make a comment that Dave, you mentioned earlier, how cocaine would fall from the sky in Miami, and that's actually a very literal statement. I grew up in Miami Lakes for the first 20 years of my life, and I used to go fishing in the mangrove islands in the Keys with my father, and we would take a guide who would take us to the best fishing spots. And those mangrove islands were basically a labyrinth of waterways that you could only navigate if you were a professional like the captains who
yeah.
took us out. And what they did, what the one that took us out, what he would do in his spare time was collect the bags that were dropped from airplanes that contain cocaine. They would drop them in these waterways that can only that you know weren't certainly easily
sure
patrolled, and they would go and pick them up and deliver them. So he was sort of a middleman. So literally, the cocaine was falling from the sky.
That sounds like a little bit of a Tropic Hunt right there. What's your question on Tropic Hunt? That's Dave's scavenger hunt.
Yeah, that's the scavenger hunt. I started doing it when I was a kid in Miami. As far as I knew, it like time just always existed, but I assume it was conceived at some point. And the only time I come back to Miami now is to do the Tropic Hunt. And I was just wondering how that came about and how we can get it in Los Angeles.
Hey, Dave, what is it? How'd you come up with it? Do you still do it?
It was an idea that the magazine called the Sunday magazine, the Miami Herald, was called Tropic. And mm-hmm. in 1984, we decided it was based on a little hunt that was a fundraiser for a temple in Miami that was invented by a guy named Dave Harris. And we thought, what do we put on a hunt for the entire South Florida community and create this giant puzzle? And if you solve it, you can win a trip to Paris. And we didn't know what we were doing. And that was 1984. And we've been doing it ever since with a couple of years we've missed. And now we do it in Miami once a year and Washington. The Washington Post sponsored one once a year. It's become this big cult thing. The people who do it just love it. And we get thousands of people. We get people to travel from other countries to do it.
And what do you find at the end of the hunt? What's the prize?
It's usually not, you know, it's a cruise. It's something like that. But it's really the joy of the hunt for most of the people.
Yeah, it sounds great.
It's a lot of fun. It's weird. I got to just say one thing, though. Yeah. There's a guy named Kurt Ivey who was the chief of police in Homestead, Florida. Mm-hmm. This is about 10 years ago. He was doing a Citizens Crime Watch meeting.
Okay.
In his little neighborhood there, outdoors on somebody's patio.
Yeah.
And he's almost hit by a 75-pound bale of cocaine. Falling from the sky in a Citizens Crime Watch meeting. That's a true Miami story.
A newspaper columnist cannot get richer material.
You can't make that up.
You cannot make that up. David in Pelham, New Hampshire. David, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Dave Barry.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Dave, former next door neighbor from Gables by the Sea.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
Hey, wait, which one are you?
David Williams.
Oh, damn. My goodness. Yes, indeed.
I just wanted to say thanks, as always, for your humor. When my dad passed 6 years ago, when we were going through his stuff, we found he had saved every article you had ever written where he or we or Bear were mentioned.
Bear was their dog, and my dogs were big fans of Bear's work. And they would go out and sniff at him. They'd go a big giant mound of poop and go, "This is classic Bear. This is." Anyway, your dad was a great guy. You guys are great. I hope all's well, and love to your mom.
Thank you. She's still out in Montana, and I got to say it was bittersweet going through his stuff. But reading the article of him taking you golfing at Riviera was absolutely hysterical, as always.
That sounds good, boy. If you're Dave Barry's neighbor, you're gonna be in the column, and you're gonna have some memories to savor there. David, thanks for your call. One more right here, Chad in Boston. Chad, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Dave, big fan. I grew up in Florida in the 60s, and I remember, all my friends and I just hated it. It was so boring and no toast and white bread. and we all wished for a change, and so we all moved away. And my brother still lives there. And he just, I would go back to visit him, and just it would be exciting and interesting. And, we got to change. It was just bigger than we all thought.
Yeah, it was a lot more change than anybody ever saw coming. Nothing has changed more than in Miami since the 60s.
But if you were bored, Chad, you should have just stuck around. It heated up a lot.
Had I had Dave Barry's foresight, I would have done that. The thing that when I went back, and I have been back several times, my brother shows up at the airport. He's got a gun. And I can't believe it. My brother's got a gun. So we go to a party later that week, and I'm telling my friends, from high school, isn't this crazy? My brother's got a gun. They said, "What do you mean crazy? We all have guns." they're pulling out their guns at the party and showing me up. Thinking, "This is crazy."
Welcome to Miami.
A lot of people have guns.
Yeah, I guess so. Chad, thanks for calling. Everybody's got a gun at the party. Awesome. Hey, Dave, you know the scene down there. What about Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush? We're going to see them up on the presidential podium one day or going for that spot?
I don't know. I find it hard to believe that Jeb would. I kind of know him a little bit, and I don't see him wanting that attention for his family. But Marco Rubio, definitely, he's gonna be a candidate. There's no doubt in my mind.
He's come out on this bipartisan commission for immigration reform. Did that surprise you, or that's a Miami stance?
No, that's because he kind of needs to make that move, you know, to get the Latin vote. That's what he's going to do. He's a very smart guy, very good politician, and you'll see him, I think.
And what's it going to mean when Cuba opens up? I mean, everybody's been on this Fidel watch for a long time now, but sooner or later, there's going to be
Fidel
more change
died.
There.
Since I've been to Miami, Fidel has died like 17 times.
Again and again and again, but never, of course. But presumably, I mean, they're already loosening up on Cubans, to traveling. Is it going to change Miami or more of the same?
It really won't change Miami much. I think, you know, the time when it would have changed Miami was 20 years ago, when a lot of the guys who you know, wanted to go back and fight and everything were still around. That generation has kind of died off. And the generation now of Cubans, including my wife, they're Americans. They're born and raised in America. They have no desire to go back to Cuba except maybe as tourists. So I don't think it's going to be a huge change for Miami.
Well, it sounds like Miami's got enough moving and shaking and going on in the new book. Insane City is Dave Barry's new book. You can read an excerpt, by the way, at our website, onpointradio.org. Really a lot of fun. Dave Barry, joining us today from New York. Great to have you with us. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks. You have a fantastic audience.
Oh, we love them. We love them. They really are great. Hey, and they include your former neighbors, including those who owned Bear. We'll never forget Bear here. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, man.
Dave Barry's new novel is Insane City. Excerpt at the website. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.